to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. It's Saturday evening, August 15th, and we are so happy to be with you, and we thank you sincerely for tuning in to our live broadcast this evening, whether you're tuned in on the internet or on one of our AM/FM affiliate stations. God bless you for being here, and what a good time we've had tonight. James Edwards back now with you, along with my co-host for the evening, Winston Smith, and let's just go right back into it. And Winston, I know you were completing a thought there at the end of the final segment of the second hour, but we'll get back into that now with our featured guest for the next couple of segments, our good friend from an organization that truly has very few, if any, equals, Frank Roman of European Americans United. Frank, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you, James?
I am doing great, even better now that you've joined us again. And I tell you, Winston, it just dawned upon me that we're touring Tennessee tonight with our guests.
Indeed.
Dr. Abernathy and now Frank Roman. So Tennessee's finest tonight. All we need now is Jack Daniels.
Tennessee is at the center of the universe tonight, isn't it?
It is. I mean, hey, we're a good state, though. But anyway, Frank, great to have you back with us. And I know you called in last week, and we just didn't have the time to give you the respect that you deserve, so we certainly wanted to rectify that by offering you a couple of segments here to share your wisdom with our audience, and not only that, but obviously to promote and plug EAU, and we'll do that a little bit later. But Frank, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, first of all, I thoroughly enjoyed the interview you had with MP Griffin. That was a real treat, and you guys really pulled the rug out from the mainstream media having him on.
Well, we appreciate you saying.
As you know, Western Voices, World News, European Americans United, we have done all we can to promote the BNP, and we like to think that we assisted them in their historic election into the European Union. So,
well, I have no doubt that you did, Frank, and I just want to interject this. 2 points, actually. If you enjoyed listening to it, let me tell you, we really enjoyed interviewing the man. What a great guy and a nice guy at that. I've had the opportunity to break bread with him, and he's just outstanding. But let me say this, too, to accentuate what you said about Western Voices World News. Ladies and gentlemen, that's your one-stop shop. If you want opinion and commentary and news on the issues that matter most to us, go to Western Voices World News at wvwnews.net. I am there every day. But anyway, Frank, no, thank you so much for the compliment. Nick Griffin, obviously, now that's a guy that's getting the job done.
Yes, he is. But unfortunately, our so-called elected representatives are not getting the job done.
Not here in America. We don't have a lot of Nick Griffins up there in Congress right now.
No, we don't. But we have a glut of neoconservatives that pretend to be conservatives, and I was talking about that with you for just a few moments last week, and I would like to touch on that again.
By all means.
What happened was I had kind of an epiphany. The hypocrisy of the Republican conservatives came to the forefront of things for me when Mark Levin released a book called Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. And this book was lauded by the mainstream press, well, not the mainstream press, but the neoconservative press, let's say, and as the final definition of what it means to be a conservative. Okay, the basic premise of this book, and actually the basic premise of the entire neoconservative movement is this. Conservatism, as we know it today, is the antidote to tyranny, precisely because its principles are the founding principles. That's what they say. That's what Mark Levin said. So what Levin is saying, and what most Americans believe, unfortunately, is that today's conservatives, today's neoconservatives, are like the founding fathers, today's conservatives, and today's conservatives are like the founding fathers. So in other words, George Washington, I guess, was a supply-sider, and Thomas Jefferson believed in preemptive war. That is basically what they're trying. That's the kind of wool they pulled over our eyes.
Now, yeah, the disconnect there between the founding fathers and today's so-called conservative Republicans would bridge the Atlantic. I mean, that's
the founding fathers. If they were alive today, they'd already be in prison.
that's the truth. And you know what? The Republicans would have been working right along with the Democrats, Frank, to put them there.
Well, the neoconservatives, you know, given Barack Obama's Marxist background and with Saul Alinsky and his tiny yet liberal voting record, it was the same neoconservatives, these neoconservative global blowhards who actually put Obama in the White House. If it's blame the neoconservatives want to assign, they have to blame... They don't have to blame fashion-conscious voters that they themselves have helped to create over these several decades. They need to blame themselves, and I'll tell you why. The power of false ideas. The power of false ideas motivates people to do what they otherwise wouldn't do, and I'll get to my main point in a second. My friend John Young likened that to an analogy of, say you're in a foxhole, and it's raining bullets and artillery, and you are ordered to climb out of that foxhole and do something that goes totally against your nature. Okay? It's the same thing. In this last election, people were motivated by false ideas to elect the wrong people. That's essentially what the neocons did to the American public regarding Ron Paul's candidacy, not to mention Pastor Baldwin and Pat Buchanan back in 2000. These were the most qualified men to be elected president. But the power of false ideas generated by the neocons and in the media prevented that from happening. It was Limbaugh. It was Sean Hannity.
That's
Mark
right.
Mark Levin.
That's right.
Ingram, O'Reilly, Neil Bortz, who regularly and without fail demonized and pilloried people like Dr. Ron Paul, who was a gentleman with a traditional American ideology, and he actually stood a good chance against Barack Obama. And, again, the same goes for Pastor Baldwin in 2007 and Pat Buchanan in 2000. So, in other words, the candidates, those three candidates, the very candidates who could have brought about the kind of government the neocon Republicans pine away for every day on radio and TV, were not supported. But instead, they and their supporters, like you and I, we were cast as lunatics and they were cast as fringe candidates by the very mainstream media neocons claim to oppose. And they let the media get away with it.
And that's obviously because, Frank, people like O'Reilly and Limbaugh and Hannity are not true paleoconservatives. In fact, they're false opposition, and they do more to destroy credible conservative candidates than they ever do to further the tenets they supposedly espouse.
Well, James, I don't think they're any sort of conservative. They are entertainers, and they will do and say what is necessary to keep their ratings up. And, you know, Barack Obama is a godsend for Hannity and for O'Reilly and for Limbaugh. He's given them 4 and probably 8 years of things to talk about.
Well, they talk out of both sides of their mouths.
Yes, they do. Thank you, Frank.
Because, look, on the surface of things, okay, to the run-of-the-mill Fox News fan, okay, the neocons and Ron Paul, they do have agreements, but the neocons are lying, okay? But on the surface, they agree with Ron Paul on things like sound money, lower taxes, a strong national defense, border security, the protection of civil liberties, good education, earmark reform. They're all against abortion. But when it comes down to it, they are not going to go that route because that goes against, their sponsors. It all comes down to money. They're simply not going to support a man that walks the walk besides talk the talk, because it inherently goes against the wishes of their sponsors.
Well, very subtly put, Frank, and you're exactly spot on, as usual. Listen, if Hannity and O'Reilly and Limbaugh truly wanted to come out of the closet, so to speak, and endorse a guy like Buchanan, their puppet masters would pull the rug out from under them. They could only do what they told. They are Republicans, not conservative, but they are Republicans, and worse yet, Republican propagandists. And I'm going to tell you exactly how bad the Republican Party is when we come back. And we're going to continue on with Frank Roman of European Americans United. Folks, if you haven't joined that organization yet, go check them out. And, of course, check out Western Voices World News at WVWnews.net. Anyway, we'll be right back with Frank Roman and more right after this.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Continuing on now, ladies and gentlemen, James Edwards and Winston Smith here with you, along with Frank Roman of European Americans United. We're talking with Frank about the Republican Party in general and the neoconservative movement and their figureheads specifically. The Republican Party right now as it stands, I think we all can agree, is hopeless if you're a paleoconservative or an American with nationalistic leanings, as certainly I have. I'm not saying it can't be taken back. I do believe what's been taken from us can be taken back. But I don't even know if we have the genetic predisposition to work together long enough to do that, because we are so ruggedly individualistic. But we have seen some good trends. I do have hope. What we saw with the amnesty movement last year, what we've seen this year in these town hall meetings, our people are coming together. What we need to do is capitalize on the positive tendencies here and then multiply them to be more frequent and longer lasting. But anyway, I don't know what's going on in Chattanooga, Frank, with the Republican Party, but I can't tell you what's going on in Memphis. I think in Tennessee, the Republican Party voted for John McCain more than any other state in the union, a higher percentage. The Republicans won every county except Davidson County and Shelby County, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, you have the biggest pockets of minorities there in Nashville and Memphis. Here in Shelby County, this is what the Republican Party is up to, Frank. And tell me if this sounds like a winning strategy. And I know this because we have moles in the Republican Party here that report. But listen, here's what's up. They don't want anybody in the party that opposes the North American Union, because they claim that people who oppose the North American Union are racists. Secondly, the chairman of the Shelby County Republican Party says that even though the Republicans are never going to compete on another countywide election, he says the ticket to winning back the countywide offices in Shelby County is to go out and have more outreach in the black communities. And he said, and this is a direct quote, Frank, I'm not making this stuff up. I couldn't make this stuff up. He says it might take 15 years for us to win their trust, but that is what the Republican Party is going to have to do, both here and nationally, if we ever want to compete again.
Well,
Frank, it goes without saying, there needs to be some house cleaning in the GOP.
Well, it sounds to me like he took his marching orders from Michael Steele. That's exactly what Michael Steele's been ever since he took the chairmanship of the Republican Party.
And what a buffoon he is.
He's been screaming for quote-unquote minority outreach. However, let's keep one thing in mind here. Even a blind man can see that the resistance to this health care reform debacle, the resistance to the immigration movement, is all implicitly Caucasian.
Yeah, 100%.
Implicitly. Okay, not explicitly, but implicitly Caucasian. You have the Campaign for Liberty, implicitly Caucasian. You have Numbers USA, implicitly Caucasian. So yes, our individualism as European Americans, I think perhaps that's being breached a little bit, but on a implicit level, and that's always hopeful.
Well, I agree with you absolutely, Frank. But you know, like I said, we've got to do more. I have seen more positive trends, and I often get ragged by the listeners of this program for being too down in the mouth and reporting too much negative news. But truly, over the course of the last year and a half, the election of Obama notwithstanding, but truly, McCain wouldn't have been any worse. So we didn't win or lose that election because whoever won, we lost with the options that we had there. But
if I could interject something here,
yeah,
whenever you're feeling a little down in the mouth about our political prospects, may I suggest that you go to the website of the American National Party and consider those claims. I always get a good feeling when I go there.
Now, if we can only elect some of their members, that's the trick,
well,
I guess. But anyway, I don't want to segue over into third parties and things like that, but anyway, Frank, listen, we've got to have you on for an hour. 30 minutes isn't long enough. We've got Ted Pike coming up, and we're not quite done with you yet. I just want to let you know I'm going to be calling you this week because we've got to do more. You have such a presence on the radio, and the way you deliver the message, I think, is just absolutely superior. And ladies and gentlemen, let me also say, if you've enjoyed hearing Frank Roman thus far during the course of this interview, you're going to love his podcasts. And you can catch those out at Western Voices
Indeed.
World News as well. Yes, Winston?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you. You said it just right at the beginning. Western Voices World News is your one-stop shop, and I always look forward to Frank Roman's podcast. They are riveting pieces of broadcast. I never tire of them, and I always look forward to a new one.
Well, thank you so much.
Frank, like I said,
I would ask everyone, I didn't put one up this weekend, but I would ask everyone that can hear me right now to go to Western Voices World News and listen to John Young's recent podcast called Standing on a High Mountain if you want something invigorating to listen to and something inspiring. John gave a speech in the Midwest recently, and it was recorded, it was unscripted, and it was amazing. So we have it up now, and I would urge everyone to take a listen, and if you want to get busy, we have what you need organizationally. And I would like to, I see our time is almost up. I'd like to say this one thing. We're talking about Ron Paul, okay? I want to make it clear that most of the people I know that are European-American advocates, they understand that Ron Paul is not a white nationalist, okay? But white nationalists and race realists, we were ready to put aside any policy differences that we may have had with Dr. Paul, among them being that he didn't have any white preservationist tendencies, at least to my knowledge, because we all knew our chance to at least try to build a European-American constitutional government with Ron Paul in the White House was entirely possible. So we thought, well, we're not going to get someone up there that came out of European Americans United or came out of the studios of the political cesspool in the White House, but Ron Paul would have given us the freedom to be who we are and to work on behalf of our own people in an environment that is unique to our people. So that's why we're so high on
No, Ron Paul, you know, had obviously, it goes without saying, and this is an understatement, a lot of very good qualities, and he had rabid support. I tell you, he had more support than any other two candidates combined, and I'm very skeptical about the low totals he received at the ballot box. But nevertheless, you know, I voted for Ron Paul in the primary. It was the first time I've ever voted in the Republican primary, and I voted for Ron Paul, and like everybody else I've ever voted for, he lost. And I did end up voting for Chuck Baldwin as well in the general election. But, you know, Ron Paul, you're talking about mainstream. I mean, this was a man, obviously a Republican, but yes, an elected member of Congress. So you can't ask for much more.
No.
And even he was treated with the same disdain and contempt that people like Buchanan, people from outside of the halls of Congress get. And the way they treated Ron Paul and tried to render him obsolete was really surprising because he's one of the boys as far as that goes.
It was despicable. But again, as I say, under Ron Paul, see, European Americans are unique, even compared to our brothers and sisters overseas. From the earliest days, our people thrived in an environment of freedom. And that was truly unique. And because of that freedom, European Americans, as a people, we were able to flourish, and we accomplished more than anyone else. No, we're not perfect, but as a distinct people, games, we were unmatched in many ways compared to the rest of the world.
Well, and you look at Western civilization
under that kind of presidency.
If you want a first world nation, you got to have a first world population. I said that on CNN, and no one is capable of continuing on Western civilization other than the people who created it. And so with that, Frank, listen, 30 minutes is not nearly enough with you. We didn't even scratch the tip of the iceberg. We're going to have you on for much longer, again, very soon. But folks, in between now and then, check out his wonderful website and his wonderful organization by going to WVWnews.net. And Frank, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you, James, and congratulations on your first child.
Thank you so much. Frank Roman, everybody. We'll be back with more.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of
this place. What a great night we've had in the political cesspool thus far this evening. Dr. Virginia Abernathy of Vanderbilt University on with us. You just heard from Frank Roman. And thanks to European Americans United for all of the support they've given this program over the years. We've covered a lot of ground this evening as well, from sports to immigration, health care, the Republican Party and neoconservatism, and we're not even done yet because one of our best friends in the world, as this is a Christian program, and it's always great to have our next gentleman as a guest, Winston Smith. With that being said, we want you to introduce him.
James, you were right to thank Frank Roman for all of his work with European Americans United and Western World News. But we owe at least as much thanks to our next guest. Reverend Ted Pike is the head of National Prayer Network, and in all matters hate crime bill, we have no one to thank but Reverend Ted Pike, who has done the yeoman's work of keeping us informed and constantly staying on top of that to show us how we can defeat this thing, how we can preserve our freedoms. But if that's all you know of Reverend Ted Pike, you don't know very much at all, because he's also an accomplished artist, a sculptor, a painter, and a poet. You can see samples of his work at truthtellers.org. That's www.truthtellers.org. And I could go on and on talking about the abilities and the overall good guidance of Reverend Ted Pike. But let's just bring him on the air now. Reverend Pike, thank you for coming back to the political cesspool.
Well, thank you very much.
That'll be $100 for the introduction, Ted. No, actually, everything Winston said is completely sincere, and we mean it from the heart. It's great to have you, Reverend Pike. Thank you for standing on the front lines of the battle to keep us from this Orwellian thought suppression that they call hate crimes legislation. I know you've got a new tactic that we're trying to employ, and we want to make your message available to our audience. So take it away, please, Reverend Pike.
Oh, yes. Well, several weeks ago, when the hate bill did finally pass the Senate, attached to the military appropriations bill, I had hoped we could get some competition going between the Senate and the House versus the President concerning the President's promise to veto the arms-slash-hate bill if they put on F-24 Raptors and other things. And that kind of fell through. The House wanted to conform it. Leadership were going to conform their military bill with the Senate just to make Obama happy. And, of course, the main reason for making Obama happy was that so that Obama wouldn't strip off the hate bill. But this summer, I have my spirits have been revived with the widespread town hall uprisings, if we want to use that word, but certainly speaking out, protesting, complaining against Democratic high-handedness that's going on everywhere on the grassroots level. And I have written a few articles telling people we should not give up a possibility of ultimately persuading Obama to at least not sign the hate bill. And I've written articles telling them to get involved in the town hall meetings, not just debating the health care issue, but also protesting against the hate bill and thinking very positively about the possibility that we might just create such antagonism and resentment to the Democrats that Obama himself would be glad to be rid of such a an explosive issue as the hate bill and let it founder in committee.
So you're not suggesting that we try to convince Obama that it's wrong for America, because he would never believe that. Obviously, he wants what's wrong for America, but we could make it appeal to his political interests or best interests. That's what you're suggesting, correct?
Absolutely. Now, added to this is the recent statement, an interview was granted just last week by Senator Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, who's the very prestigious and powerful head of the Senate Appropriations and Committee, and also its Defense Subcommittee. And Inouye says that this question of fighting Obama is not over with yet. You see, several months ago, Obama threatened that if Congress added on something like 7 to 12 F-24 Raptor fighters on, plus if he added on about 150 new jet engines for the new about 150 F-35 fighters, if he added those jet engines on, he'd also veto the hate bill. Now, the hate bill that went through the Senate cut off the F-24 Raptors, making Obama happy. But suddenly, this week, rising to the surface, Daniel Inouye, along with John Murtha, who's his counterpart, head of the House Defense Subcommittee over in the House, top number one mover and shaker there in the House concerning defense appropriations matter, both of them are saying now they're going to put up a fight to try to get 150 jet engines developed through a new contractor, so that these 150 F-35 fighters will have a spare engine in case they lose an engine or it malfunctions during combat. They'll have a spare engine created by a different manufacturer in the warehouse, ready to go and keep them in the air. And so they are tempting a possible veto, I should say a promised veto, by Obama if they can convince the House and the Senate in conference coming up in only 3 or 4 or 5 weeks to add on the new jet engines. Now, what's happening here is we have a possible conflict again here, which could result in a veto of the arms-slash-hate-bill package. And it's our duty, it's our business, our opportunity now to get out on the town hall circuit and start raising a stink again about this hate bill, so that kind of in the back door can get to Obama and persuade Obama that he really doesn't want this hate bill. And if he wants to go ahead and veto a new arms bill with the jet engines added, he can go ahead and do it. He can veto it, and he won't even have the stigma of having violated his promise to veto it.
It's refreshing, I guess, to an extent, Ted, to see that for once it's not the conservatives breaking ranks with one another. The Democrats, for a change, seem to not have their house in order. Usually liberals will band together.
That's exactly what happened 2 years ago. The hate bill passed, and we were hoping that President Bush would veto it, but it was getting later and later in the year. The arms bill was still dallying about 6 months later, and Bush was desperate to get it out to pay for our military. And then, lo and behold, no less than 75 Democrats broke ranks with the arms bill. They didn't like it because it didn't require us to get out of Iraq according to a schedule. So they abandoned the hate bill arms bill package, and they themselves shot down the hate bill 2 years ago. Now, exactly the same thing could happen this time around.
What can we do? What can we do, the listeners of this radio program and their friends, to ensure that it does?
Best thing to do is to make that hate bill extremely unpopular with President Obama. Let him know that we're not mad just about health care and other things, We are furious that there is a law now to be signed by him that will turn America into a hate crimes bureaucracy like Canada, taking away free speech and stripping us of all our First Amendment, Tenth Amendment, 14th Amendment rights. Now, if we can make it unprofitable for Obama and unprofitable for the Democrats in Congress to go ahead and push that hate bill down the throat of the American people, then this controversy between Inouye and Murtha and the president could work very powerfully to our advantage. I don't think Obama has any great loyalty to the hate bill. He's an intelligent man, and any intelligent person can tell that that's a phony, conspiratorial, contrived bill. And look around what's happening in the world. All these hate laws are taking away free speech.
Yeah, I don't know if Obama necessarily favors or disfavors it, but President Rahm Emanuel sure does, and Obama takes his orders just like the rest of us. That's my point of contention.
Well, that's right, but if the president's word and his resolve not to spend $2 billion more on extra engines, if he holds to that and he sticks to his guns, and you see, this would be his first veto challenge in Congress of his administration. And a president does not want to be backed down and made to look foolish and humiliated before a maverick Democratic Congress in his first veto threat. And so there's a lot on the line there. And I think everybody should not only work in the town hall forum to express dissatisfaction with the hate bill, you should also pray that God will put a spirit of contention
Reverend
between the Democrats.
Sit tight. We're going to be back with more with Reverend Ted Pike when the political cesspool concludes right after this.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back to the final segment of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool. Before we continue on with Reverend Ted Pike of truthtellers.org and, of course, the National Prayer Network, I want to thank once again Dr. Virginia Abernathy and Frank Roman for joining us this evening. And, of course, thanks goes out to all of you in our listening audience who make this radio program possible and who have made it possible for the past 5 years now. We'll be 5 years old on October 26th, we've got a big five-year-old birthday party coming up here on Liberty News Radio. And thanks to Liberty News Radio, the network here that gives us a home and gets us out to so many of you. Great staff, great team of people here to work with, and we couldn't be happier to be a part of the team here on the Liberty News Radio Network. That being said, Winston Smith, back over to you and Reverend Ted.
Reverend Pike, first of all, I want to encourage people to go to www.truthtellers.org. and watch the 7.5-minute video titled "Town Hall Outrage:
Absolutely.
Kill the Hate Bill."
That's a new video.
Yes, and they're always good videos that you find at National Prayer Network. But Reverend Pike, as I understand it, the hate bill has three steps to go through. The first is that it has to be ironed out, in conference by the House and the Senate. There are differences between the House version and Senate version, so they'll meet in conference to iron out those differences. And then once they do that, each House will vote on a final version of it. And if it's approved, if it's voted for, then it will go to the President for signing. Now, how much time do you think there is between the conference and the final approval in the House and Senate?
Well, that could be a very short amount of time. It's just a matter of running it through in both houses of Congress, and then even maybe the next week the president can sign it. But I think the conference is going to take up some time, though. The House and Senate are coming back on September 6th, so we have a little more than 3 weeks to work the town hall circuit very thoroughly. And then I will probably be announcing the conferees, delegates from the House and the Senate who will be deliberating this, and probably publish that at Truth Tellers and encourage people to call them with criticisms of the hate veil. We have to mount a consistent avalanche, a barrage of criticism of the hate veil now, probably lasting up to 7 or 8 weeks. The conference committee could be deliberating all of the details of the hate bill, arms bill package, particularly the arms bill package, for a good several weeks, maybe longer than that. And, of course, this is all complicated by the tremendous controversy over health care reform, which could kind of monopolize the attention of the conference and the senators, House members. On the other hand, the arms bill is always top priority, and with the hate bill attached on there, it could move forward faster than usual.
Reverend Pike, I want to say this. We might take for granted that just because we've had you on dozens of times over the course of the last 5 years to talk about this issue, we must keep in mind that this is a vibrant and a growing radio program who welcomes new listeners to the show each and every week. We got a lot of mail just this week from people who tuned in last Saturday for the first time. So if anyone, and it would be hard to believe, but if anyone is not aware of what the hate crimes bill is truly all about, let's be very clear. It basically would make it anyone who holds Christian beliefs regarding homosexuality or conservative beliefs on any number of issues, you could basically be thrown in jail for speaking out against political correctness. Is that right, Reverend Ted?
Well, up in Canada, you can right now. Your words on the radio in criticism of homosexuality or matters Jewish, anything like that, it means a $5,000 fine. And it means that the radio station gets shut down and loses its license. So they're very strict up there against free speech. Here in the United States, after the hate bill is passed, it will be a while as cases are brought before federal judges and judges all up the appellate ladder, who will be basically legislating from the bench. And predictably, as has happened in all countries, they will not only protect the members of federally protected groups, such as homosexuals, blacks, Jews, Muslims, and so on, from physical hate-motivated violence, but also from what is called verbal violence, those cutting words which diminish members of these groups. So this law will rapidly radiate out into a broad speech crimes law for America eventually. I don't know how soon that will be, but as these cases pile up, basically, the original hate bill will be added to and modified on the judicial level.
And obviously, the United States of America, unlike other first world nations who have these Orwellian thought crime bureaucracies in place, such as Great Britain and Australia and Canada, etc., Germany, of course, the United States does have the First Amendment, which supposedly guarantees us that unalienable gift. A freedom of speech, that God-given right to freedom of speech. Obviously, this would be in conflict with that.
Yeah, the thing is, though, what the pro-hate bill people will do and pro-hate bill judges is they will begin to enlarge a category of speech, which they say is indefensible speech, is hate speech. And so they will have no tolerance for intolerance or no tolerance for intolerant speech. They will add criticism of these groups to things like shouting fire in crowded theater, libel, slander, inciting to riot, and so on. And all the time they'll be claiming that free speech is alive and well in the United States.
So basically we'll have free speech as long as we don't say anything that the government doesn't like.
Well, that is
the ruse. And even now the liberals in Congress are very, very defensive of the inviolability of the First Amendment while they're working to subvert it at the same time.
That's the problem with these bills. It doesn't really matter what form they are in when they're signed into law. It matters what they can become.
Yeah.
Right.
And we see what has happened with
exactly,
our own Constitution.
Winston.
Look at what Congress has done with our own Constitution.
Yeah.
The average person of average intelligence could read the Constitution and then look at the country that's supposed to result from it, and that person would conclude that there is no resemblance between the Constitution and the country.
Yeah.
And if Congress can do that with the Constitution, can you imagine what it can do with a hate crimes bill or with a health care bill?
Well, it'll morph and evolve and become more and more restrictive and there'll be more and more censorship. I mean, we know once they get, as Keith Alexander always says, the camel's nose in the tent, they are able to do anything after it's been implemented. They
That's
can
right.
Take it in any direction in which they please. So the easiest thing to do is to make sure that it never gets put in.
Indeed.
And we have
to make sure that these things are shredded and destroyed so that no two words go together, that no two pages are together. They have to be utterly destroyed, because if we leave two words together in those things, the Marxists that have taken over Congress will take those two words, build upon them, and learn the lessons from the previous failure and improve their methods to foist this upon us.
Well, you're exactly right, Winston. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, if you're concerned about the implementation of the hate crimes legislation, so-called hate crimes legislation, in the United States of America, go get your marching orders, get on the team, and follow the game plan, the excellent game plan, which has been set forth by Reverend Ted Pike. You can get it at truthtellers.org. There he lays it all out, what you can do to do your part to make sure that this doesn't raise its ugly head and oppressive head in our country. Truthtellers.org. It's updated frequently. Ted, we only have about a minute left. A final word from you, sir.
Well, I will be writing an article literally in the next five minutes about this new development with Inouye and the MRTHA wanting to take on the president and defy his wishes. So people should come to truthtellers.org tonight and certainly tomorrow night when it'll be up. Get the details and go out next week. By the way, a Family Research Council does have a list of upcoming town hall meetings. And you can go to FRC, Family Research Council, for that. Let's scope out the enemy territory for the next 3 weeks and do everything we can to go to town hall meetings, make some big signs and banners against the hate bill, and also I have some excellent argumentation in my latest email that's up at Truth Tellers right now. Good arguments that you can propose to these left-wing senators on their home turf.
Reverend Pike, we can't thank you enough for standing on the watchtower, as they say, and we'll continue to fight with you as long as there's life in us until God himself calls us home, and we look forward to the next time you're on this program.
Thank you so much, James and Winston.
Anytime. Well, Winston, we are just about out of time. It's been more than a pleasure to serve with you again on this radio program. We'll be back next week on behalf of Winston Smith, Bill Rowland, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, Peter Scoop Stanton, Art Frith, and the rest of the cast and crew here in Memphis at AM 1380 WLRM Radio that make the Political Cesspool radio program possible, and, of course, our good team at the network there, Liberty News Radio. I am James Edwards. We'll see you next week. Good night, everyone. God bless you. And remember to live life the way we do, without retreat, surrender, or apology. Good night.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.